It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. Taking your calls, taking your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text 57500. Ton, our next listener is asking about asparagus. They've got some rootstock, and they need some advice on how to get them going.
Well, asparagus are one that need to be planted in a trench. And instead of going into all the, not really gory details, but it is something that you do over a period of a few years to where you dig a trench and plant them. And as they get more mature and the roots expand out and they get more stalks, then you slowly bury them in. So what I would recommend they do is just search online on their favorite search engine. Dave just keeps coming right on DuckDuckGo, but any of them will work. But anyway, search on your search, just search USU and asparagus in the garden, and you'll get a great fact sheet on Utah gardening experts and garden guys and gals. If you go to Facebook to Garden Guys and Gal, then Sheridan Hansen has a great video on planting asparagus that you could look at also.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. We have Wayne in Bountiful. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning. Thank you for taking this call. I have a problem in my lawn that some kind of insect is chewing off the roots. And what I've been doing, it isn't working.
Okay. Have you been applying a grub killer?
Yes.
Okay. And when do you see the damage show up?
It's usually June, July.
Okay. And what grub killer have you been using?
I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Okay. No, that's fine. What are you getting the grub killer from, like a farm store or a box store?
Yes.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking is I'm trying to figure out how many square feet the bag would approximately do. So how big is your lawn?
Oh, it's just one spot.
It's usually just in one area.
Okay, so it's not the entire lawn.
What's
and this the... one, does it seem to spread or just stay in that one area?
Pretty much in one area.
So that's probably not insects, because insects would spread out and go from eating little snacks to turning your lawn into a buffet, so to speak. And so I more suspect there may be something in the soil or wrong with the soil that's causing the lawn to die there.
What do you suggest?
I would get a soil test done, and so what you would do is remove some of the turf and dig down about 6 inches and get 2 measuring cups of soil, and then go to the website usual.usu.edu and download the paperwork and then mail that to the soil lab. And they can see if it's salty or your salinity, or excuse me, the pH is too high. But that would be the first place to start. Now, how long has your home existed there? When was it built?
61.
And so is there a septic tank in that area or anything construction-wise that was buried there that you know of?
No.
Okay. It would be worth testing, but there's, for some reason, the soil there could be a little different and it could be compacted. But the first thing I start with is to make sure that that soil is not salty for some reason.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
May I ask another question?
Sure, go ahead.
We have boysenberries. And it seems like the new growth that, you know, comes up in the spring, maybe you get 10 feet longer or more. But when I have them on a trellis, when I put them on a trellis, they seem to die back to maybe within
this year, especially
3 or 4 feet from the ground, and I don't understand why.
Boysenberries are not cold hardy, and so the canes are being killed during the winter, and so that's probably why they're dying back every year. So if you want to try to grow them, what you would do is the new growth that happens this year, leave it on the ground. And hopefully it gets covered with snow, and if not, you might try covering with straw, and don't trellis it until next year in the spring.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Okay, and if that's still not working, it just could be too cold, and you might need to switch your varieties over to something like Triple Crown or Navajo. And there's several good ones that are more cold hardy.
I was wondering if maybe the dry winters we've had the last
it
couple of years.
Could. The blackberries are usually, boysenberries are usually, you know, fairly tolerant of such things, but it very well could be. But boysenberries are just not really well suited to the Utah climate, to where other blackberries are.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, Ton, if there's anything they can do to prepare for squash bugs now. Those squash bugs.
Sorry, I start chuckling.
I
started
about
thinking
squash bugs.
If I knew of any seances or dances they could be doing to try to, like, voodoo or bless the garden into not having them. Monitoring is going to be the most important. Once that squash has come up or is planted, the squash bugs start to show up in mid to late June usually, and you'll start to see some adults with the egg sacs on the undersides of the leaves. During the first half of the season, if you can keep those egg sacs pinched off, and the adults, if you find them, throw them into a bucket of soapy water. But, you know, there's really no preventative pesticide you can use for them, but monitoring is your most important tool.
Is it too late to put fertilizer stakes by their trees?
Don't use fertilizer stakes unless they're just very extenuating circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I would just rather see them use lawn fertilizer. It's all chemically the same. The tree doesn't know. And if you use lawn fertilizer, you get more nutrients to the tree more quickly when they can use the nutrients, because those trees pretty much stop growing by mid-July. You might see a bit of new growth, but all that growth happens, 90% of it, is in May and June, and that's a critical time. And so you want to get those nutrients to the trees and make it as available as possible. And so a granular fertilizer is always going to be better.
Is it too late to add chelated iron to trees?
It's getting there, but as long as we stay below 85, they may see some benefit. The best time of year to do that is when the snow melts off to about mid-April.
All right, Randy is in Provo with a question. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing very well, thanks.
You there?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So I'm putting in some new lawns at my house and my brother-in-law's house. He has some of the goat head stickers, and I'm concerned. I'm going to till them in with compost. I'm concerned that they will grow back through the sod. Is there anything I need to do there? Do I need to remove them? Can I just till them in?
Well, there's really not much you can do. I've heard of people like taking carpet out and putting it on a roller and trying to get them to stick into the carpet. Larry Sagers used to tell stories about people rolling pumpkins and watermelons and things, but there's really not a lot you can do, because you can't use a pre-emergent, because that will keep the grass from rooting. So the best defense is to keep the sod healthy and thick. And as long as you have healthy sod, that puncture vine will never germinate through it.
Okay. Okay. So just maintain a good, healthy sod.
That's your best defense.
So I'd be better to put in sod instead of like hydro seeding.
Well, yes, but you can do the hydro seeding, and what would happen is that the puncture vine would come up through, but in the, you know, and you may have to, as the lawn is mature enough, go out there with a screwdriver or something, or just hand pull it out before it starts to form seeds. And if you want to hydro seed, you could definitely do that. But even hydro seeding, as that lawn gets established over 3 to 6 months, and especially into next year, the puncture vine, if you, you know, do it correctly, the puncture vine won't come up through.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Rex is listening in Ogden. They have done some xeriscaping with rocks on they're on the east bench. And they're saying landscaping company installed a quarter-inch water line to water a couple of different kinds of maple trees. But the soil is so rocky. Is there a high risk to overwater those two trees?
No. This tree roots will grow through the rocks. They can do that. It's just miserable to dig in. I've dug in that North Ogden soil before, and you earn every penny as a landscape contractor when you're working there. So, but no, there's not really. The water holding capacity is a little less, and sometimes you can get rocks and clay soil. But as long as they're watering correctly and checking the soil, I know with the rocks it can be a little harder, but the trees will grow just fine.
They're being watered daily, so
maybe too much, especially on that drip system. I am liking drip systems on trees less and less.
Oh, really?
They're fine the first 2 or 3 years, but what do you do with that drip system when the roots are reaching out 10 feet and the drippers are right next to the trunk? Mm-hmm. And so short term, they're great, but as the trees grow, he's going to need to transition those drippers to what we would call micro sprinklers that are going to water more of the canopy.
All right. We have a new gardener in Riverton wondering whether they should dig up their daffodil and tulip bulbs and store them, or should they just leave them in the ground?
You can leave them in the ground as long as they bloomed well and you can tell they're not overcrowded. Don't make work for yourself.
Absolutely. And place to put them and store them.
Correct.
All right. And we're going to take a break, come back with the final segment of the KSL Greenhouse Show. We have 3 callers waiting on the lines and a lot of text questions. We'll get to as many as possible.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for joining us for the final minutes of the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls and taking your questions. Let's go back to our listeners. Next one is saying, is it okay to use straw in your garden as mulch?
Yes, it is. If you don't till it in, it's fine. The danger you run into, depending on the species of grass that was cut, you know, whether it was barley or wheat or whatever it was, if there's seed in there, it may, after the mulch decomposes the next year or even during the summer, start to germinate a little bit. And so you need to watch for that. But straw is very acceptable to use as a cover in gardens.
Okay, let's go right back to the phone lines. Randy is waiting in Provo. Randy, what can we help you with this morning? Randy, are you there?
Did we already take Randy?
We might have already taken Randy.
Yeah.
Let's go to Marianne in Springville. Good morning, Marianne. Are you there? Or we'll stay with the texters. Next text.
Oh, come on.
Good morning. Who do we have with us on the line?
This is Kirk from Centerville.
Okay, Kirk, I'm sorry that there's a confusion over who's on this line, but what can we help you with
morning? So we've got some property adjacent to us, and it's about 5 feet of peat that we've got to put some drain lines into. We'd like to put some grass or potentially a garden there and wonder how much of that peat we need to cover or take out so that we can get good growth. And
when you say peat, what do you mean?
So it's, you know, it's just organic material.
Okay.
And it's very wet. It's got some springs and things or some water that's come up through, you know, from the foothills.
Okay.
That comes up through there, and it's
okay. So it actually could be peat. I just wanted to clarify. You're probably, unless you can dry those areas out, you're probably not going to get grass to establish very well if it stays really wet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what we'll put some drains in. We've done that in an adjacent piece.
Okay.
And that gets it to dry out. We just want to make sure we get enough topsoil on there that it'll take and do well.
Yeah, and so if you were going to, it's hard to say, because if there's a good layer of organic matter, you might have to dig down. Unless you said you had 5 feet, have you gone that deep to know that it's really just that much organic matter?
Yeah, in the adjacent piece, we put in, 12-inch perforated pipe with gravel about 4 to 5 feet down in order to get that to dry out because it's a fair amount of water.
Okay. And so there's soil under there. It's just wet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. So I don't even know if you need to haul in topsoil if you can dry it out. That organic matter could be tilled into the existing soil and you could plant right over the top of it. If you do have a thick layer of organic matter, maybe you get some of that off and till it in elsewhere, but oftentimes the existing soil is just fine. One thing you could do is get a sample of the existing soil and send it up to the USU soil lab at usual.usu.edu and just have them test it, and it most likely will come back saying that it's fine for turf, and if not, you'll know. But the $30 you spend on the soil test could potentially save you hundreds of dollars in topsoil.
Right. Okay. Great.
All right, Kirk, thanks for that bit of confusion there. And, Ton, we do need to tell our listeners as well that you probably want to avoid southbound I-15 from Layton to Kaysville right now. Big backup after a problem earlier. The lanes are all now back open, but quite a bit of backing there right now. The next texter wants to know their I'm going to go back to the phone lines. I'm sorry. Some of these are so long, they're hard for me to weed through. Let's go back to the phone lines where we have Marianne in Springville. Good morning, Marianne.
Hi, how are you?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you doing this morning?
Good. My husband and I have some questions about crabgrass. We have a lot of crabgrass in our backyard. What's the solution for that?
Well, is it there right now?
Yes.
It's not crabgrass, so... if it's coming up in the early spring, it's not crabgrass, it's a perennial. And unfortunately, the only way to get rid of it is to spray it out or somehow kill it.
Spray it out with?
Yeah, with Roundup.
Roundup. Okay, so the Roundup that doesn't kill grass or Roundup
that Roundup
kills everything?
Because it's really hard to selectively take one kind of grass out of another. Now, there are, if it's not too widespread, there are devices like on Amazon and from local farm stores called wicking wands that will have instructions on mixing Roundup that you can let the weedy grass grow up above your bluegrass and then just rub the tips. You could try that to see if you could avoid killing the entire lawn.
Okay. Okay, so there's really not anything to do about it.
Grass is growing there because the Kentucky bluegrass isn't competing well. And so you may need to look at your management practices. Is it too shaded? Is it too wet? Mowed too low? Is it not fertilized enough? There's lots of questions as to how that weedy grass got established. But in general, you get those sorts of things happening when the conditions are not suited to Kentucky bluegrass.
Okay. So the only thing is, so how do we keep it from spreading?
Kill it out.
Kill it out is the only way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank
you. Good luck to you. Thanks, Marianne, for your call this morning.
Right.
Let's take our final caller. This is Kathy in Springville. Good morning, Kathy. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. I have a son who has a pine tree on the north side of his house, and it was doing well. It was green all winter long, and then when it started to get warm, it just died. All the needles fell off of it, and it died. The same pine tree is right behind my house on a different lot, and the same thing happened to it. It was green all winter, and then when spring started, it just dropped all its needles, and it died. Can you think of any reason we're afraid of a fungus or something like that? Can you give any advice?
Were these Vanderwolf's pines?
I have no idea.
Okay.
They weren't real thick like a blue spruce. The branches were more
long,
slender.
Yeah, long, soft needles.
Yes.
Yeah, they're probably Vanderwolf's.
Well, I'm not sure about that, too. Okay.
Okay.
There is probably what?
Vanderwolf's pine. If it had a more of an open, airy look and long, soft, bluish-green needles, those are Vanderwolf's.
Okay.
And they kind of do that. They're not super adapted to the valley soils, but
okay.
The reason they would do that is winter conditions where they probably dried out and then collapsed. That would be the most likely thing, but also too much water would cause that too.
The one tree I don't think it got a lot of water. My son is still putting in his sprinkling system, but it is next to a covered irrigation ditch from Strawberry Water. Could the water have seeped through that cement and gotten down to it?
I doubt it. You know, it's hard to know for sure. I mean, it's always a possibility, but, you know, I can't really say a whole lot without seeing the conditions. But when you have a pine just collapse like that, it's usually not a fungal disease. It could have been. It's more environmental conditions, and it would have been more related to too much or too little water.
Okay. All right, then. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Kathy.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
bye-bye.
So much for your call this morning. Anton, I think if you want your time to go by really fast, you should do the KSL Greenhouse Show, because 3 hours go by so quickly, and it's tough to get all the questions in.
It really is.
But you must enjoy your days, because this is what you do all day, every day. Not on the radio, but answering questions.
And... It is. I have a lot of administrative duties, and so this is a nice break sometimes from that to be able to do. I wish I could do this all day,
every
day.
I was
going
to say, boy, your time goes by very quickly when you're just answering questions. And you've been listening to the KSL Greenhouse Show. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can find more on our KSL Greenhouse Facebook page on our topics of the day, our plant of the day, moss rose. Also, a lot of stuff on drought-tolerant plants and tips for watering your lawn during the summer. Have a great weekend.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Smartin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.